Terry Broad, and Tony Assetto.
Difficulties aside here, we are live May 26th, 2014. The Raw Reaction is on the air. I am Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, hey, Tony, you with me, sir?
I'm right here.
All right, welcome in, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, real quick before we get to Raw, I just want to say, last week, if you had a chance to catch us here on the Reaction, I mentioned the return of Shikara. I was fortunate enough to be able to watch the show, and if you did not get a chance to see the show and you are a fan of storytelling and professional wrestling as well as athletic competition, I highly would recommend you make your way over to smvod.com and check out the replay. That's just a bit of a personal preference from me to you guys there listening at home. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I will openly admit to being a big Shikara fan, so it is a little bit of bias involved there, but top to bottom, solid card in my opinion. We have a jam-packed show tonight, Tony.
Yeah, we've got a lot of shit to talk about.
This may be top to bottom, the fullest edition of the Raw Reaction yet, everybody. So stay tuned, bear with us, and let's talk about Raw.
Let's.
So for those of you who didn't get a chance to see it, Daniel Bryan made his return to Monday Night Raw tonight. And he told Stephanie McMahon, when confronted about the title situation, that he would not surrender the titles. However, when he told Stephanie that he would not surrender the titles, Stephanie McMahon gave Daniel Bryan an ultimatum. At Payback this Sunday, WWE Network and certain cable providers, check your local listings, Daniel Bryan will either surrender the WWE titles or Stephanie will fire his wife, Brie Bella, for pushing her when Kane attacked him a couple weeks ago on Raw. Tony, your thoughts on the title situation, your thoughts on the fact that they're dragging this out another week, and where does our hero, Daniel Bryan, go from here?
Well, you know, for the first time in a long time, I feel like they did something that actually sold a pay-per-view as opposed to the Raw after the pay-per-view, which to me alone is kind of a big deal that we may see changing a little bit more considering how much the network is, in some people's eyes, failing. Not mine, but as a lot of reports that we see. So I thought it was really interesting that we saw something that, in my mind, we haven't seen in a long time that basically says, at the pay-per-view, such and such will happen. So I thought that was pretty interesting to note. As far as the storyline behind it, it may just be me, but I don't really care if Bree's not there. and I don't know what they're going to do. I can only imagine that they're not going to make Bryan give up the title. I think that they could find a way in which he stays with it. DeMarco did a nice piece on why he should relinquish the belt and why he should give it back. I just don't see them doing that. I think that they've put a lot into him, so much, in fact, that they don't want to be considered a failure. Not Bryan as a failure, but the company that backed him. So I'm not sure. I haven't made my final decision. But in terms of what we saw tonight, it was nice to see Bryan back. It was nice to see him stand up for himself. The crowd seemed to be really behind him. I just don't know if this, you know, ultimatum, I see why it was done and where it comes from. I don't know if anybody's going to care, though. It may just be me.
No, I'm with you here, but the only thing is I question where Brie was tonight, although, frankly, having her off the screen was probably for the long-term importance of the storyline. But at the same time, you also have to wonder if Bree's going to try to stand up for Brian and tell her to go ahead and take care of what he has to do for himself rather than worrying about Bree's current situation, because even if it's not in wrestling, Bree can find work. We're talking completely kayfabe here, of course. I mean, obviously, we hope they know where they're going with this. But at the same time here, you would think that Bree would not want her husband to give up his dream, his lifelong dream of being the WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
Right. I don't see her. excuse me. I actually think that you were you're right in the fact that we may see that happen where she would just say, "Yeah, I'm done. I'm going to do this. You know, I will leave so that you can live your dream." I don't know if they just came up with this or if this is what they were going for the entire time, but I didn't think Brian was going to say yes. I had a little bit of a apprehension towards him actually doing it, but him saying no fits with everything. So I don't know. I don't know if it's because the whole reign has been somewhat lackluster due to no fault of Brian's, or if it's just the fact that I don't care enough about Brie to get excited or unexcited about it. I just don't see it mattering. It does make me wonder what's going to happen, though, and I guess at the end of the day, that's pretty much one of the biggest things they want.
Yeah, I think a lot of what they did here, with, and like you said here, is, and I agree that they built some suspense towards the pay-per-view rather than going the old WCW tactic of trying to get you to watch Nitro the night after the pay-per-view, or how they did for the longest time where they would make sure that you had to tune into Raw to see the payoff of something that you saw on a pay-per-view. Do you think that the fact that there are no longer pay-per-views contributes in any way, shape, or form to the fact that they're trying to get more people to go to the network to see these events and make sure that they can guarantee these subscriptions?
Yeah, I think this is the first in the long line of different ways of promoting the pay-per-views that are coming up. And I'm all for it. I remember that feeling of anticipation where essentially you would tell yourself, I have to watch the pay-per-view. I mean, what if, you know, what if something happens? What if I miss it? I haven't felt that way in years. And, of course, this particular segment didn't do that for me. However, I can see the mentality behind it, and maybe they are going that route. And considering everything that's going on, I don't think it's a bad idea for anybody.
Do you think they put Brie Bella in a no-win situation here?
I don't know. I think Brie Bella isn't that important. To the focal point, even the main audience. I mean, to Total Divas viewers, she is the nicer Bella. She's the one that's less dramatic. She's likable in terms of person. But as far as on the show, they've tried to tack her on to Brian, and it's just like sometimes she's a factor, other times she's not. She's just kind of there. There's very little actual character involved other than the champion's wife. It's not like Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella. It's Daniel Bryan and his wife. And that makes us as viewers not really give a damn about the character, which means that if she gets fired, no one's really going to care.
And the other thing is if she tells Brian, if she tries to convince Brian to give up the titles there, she's going to come off almost heelish by doing so.
Right. Yeah. And, of course, that's going to elicit a lot of boos. And boos.
And with...
That's fun.
And with the Bellas being the babyface focuses of Total Divas, because like it or not, they're still pushing the Bellas down our throat as babyfaces, that's going to put a lot of heat on them as well. By proxy,
right.
Is Nikki's going to get residual reactions from it as well, and it's going to put extra drama on them, especially when they're trying to promote their Total Divas agenda.
Total Divas agenda. Sounds like a political movement.
Coming soon to the WWE Network. Along with the Steve Backlund reality show, which, by the way, needs to happen yesterday. Did you see the rumor about that, the Steve Blackman Bounty Hunter reality show coming to the network?
Oh, yeah. I did.
That needs to happen yesterday.
So long as he doesn't crack one smile.
No, of course not. It's Mr. Party Time. It is Memorial Day weekend. First of all, before we continue on the show, let me take this quick moment here to say to all of the men and women who have given their lives so that we can have the ability to sit here for an hour and a half on Monday night and BS about Monday Night Raw and the ability to watch that show in freedom in and of itself, we thank you, even though those words will never be enough. Appreciate everything that our active military does for us as well.
Yeah, good looking out, homies.
Speaking of Memorial Day weekends, I want to point out something here. Did you try to go to a grocery store at any point on Memorial Day weekend?
Oh, no. I've been recovering from a hell of a weekend. So I didn't go anywhere today except to go get a pizza.
Dude, the stores this weekend, and especially in the state of Ohio, because we actually had something resembling decent weather. Our weather wasn't bipolar for once. So we actually had something resembling decent weather for here. These stores were jam-packed with people getting everything that they needed for their cookouts. But lucky for you, I was able to restock.
Yes. So refreshing. Okay, so my first do it here is in regards to Cody Rhodes, who in, 3 seconds made me laugh immensely. Rhodes has always been a hit or miss on the mic, more hit than miss depending upon his character, but I don't think he gets enough time to actually speak so much as, I want to say, script, okay? What I mean by that is a lot of the times when he speaks, it's so in tune with the character that you assume it's lines that an actor is reading off. And I do believe that some of the best promos aren't like that. Tonight we saw Cody Rhodes in just a few short words diss Batista and Randy Orton, more so than I believe a lot of people have tried to do and failed in the past. Simply calling someone a skinny jean sellout and RK Blow is something that, you know, you see commenters on 411 say all the time or something remotely close to it. But it was so simple. It was really easy. They didn't go in there to fight Orton or Batista. They went in there to find the challengers, which leads me to question whether or not they're going with the Goldust-Cody breakup. Is this on again, off again? I don't know. But in terms of just that small segment, I thought it was really funny. Good enough to stand out to me and to mention on the show.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Him calling Batista a skinny jean sellout had me laughing way harder than I'd really like to admit. And then I actually think Triple H got in a pretty good line at the tail end of it. I don't know if you caught it or not, but Triple H looks at Batista after Batista looks at Triple H and says, he called me a skinny jean sellout. And Triple H, without missing a beat, looks over at Batista and says, you have big legs.
Yeah, I did catch that. I even put it in the report. And it's that those little things that really add to the enjoyment of the overall show. Too many times we get the scripted stuff, the stuff that is like you could kind of tell they have to hit this note, and this note. And we've heard many times before how freely a lot of the wrestlers were able to be just – they had room to breathe. They had room to interact, to ad-lib. It may just be that those two, Skinny Jean Sellout and RK Blow, were written and scripted, but the way they came off were very natural, very organic, and it just – it's one of those small segments that you tell yourself, man, I wish there was more of that.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. In one quick segment backstage, Cody Rhodes showed more personality than we've seen out of him for the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Basically, him and Goldust drop the tag titles back at Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, folks, we have a jam-packed show for you this evening. We will get to our pay-per-view predictions tonight, which, by the way, in case you've forgotten, scoreboard reads Harry 1, Tony 0. Anyway. We will talk about a little bit more. Obviously, we'll have a lot more discussion as far as Raw goes. I would like to get into the Evolution situation again a little bit later here, and we'll talk more about that. We will talk about the interesting Wyatt family segment from this evening, as well as the fact that they announced the Usos versus Eric Rowan and Luke Harper for main event, and I'll touch on that in my Harry's hit because and if they go where I think they're going, it'll lead to a very interesting situation for the payback pay-per-view. All this and more coming up here a little bit later in the Raw reaction. Tony, go ahead. You pick the first music, sir.
You know what? I don't even know. I'm just going to go at random here and give us a little bit of a break. We'll be right back.
Reaction, everybody. All right, real quick before we continue, Tony, I think it's about that time of the show where we got to pay some bills.
Let's do it.
All right. The Raw Reaction is a affiliate of Powerhouse Radio, a subdivision of www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. I am Harry Broadhurst, your voice, your play-by-play announcer for Black Diamond Wrestling and Real Action Pro Wrestling, both of which can be found on Facebook. In addition, you can connect with me on Facebook as well through either the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse group, my personal Yes, Yes, Yes group, or by finding me under my name, Harry Broadhurst, on Facebook. Tony, go ahead and mention your stuff, sir.
I am a Greg DeMarco guy. I write for 411mania.com. I have the Raw Report, which is up. I type so that you don't have to necessarily watch certain things. Certain things that you would not want to watch, such as later on tonight when we talk about a particular segment or two. There's also the, you know, visit me on the Yes, Yes, Yes page. I'm just as active, if not, you know, more than most people on there. Google me. I'm that important. So, yeah, just
anybody got time for that?
They have a little time. Be sure to check out the Wrestling 5-1 every week on 411mania.com as well. You know, still writing it, still loving it. Greg has left me with a legacy that I have done pretty well building up and keeping up to the standard that I hope that he set.
Speaking of writing, just a little bit of a tease here. I may or may not be planning my column debut for sometime later this week for ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. I definitely suggest you guys keep your eyes open for that.
Nice.
All right, real quick here, because we touched on the back end of the opening segment by getting to the effects with the Daniel Bryan situation here. Bryan raised a couple of different points that we were discussing during the music and you wanted to bring up, so I will go ahead and allow you to do so, Tony. The floor is yours.
Yeah, well, mainly it was in regards to the opening segment where it immediately started with the Authority, and for a while, they didn't say anything new, and it was kind of bothersome to me. Really, it didn't kick into gear until Triple H did his awesome little segue in regards to the Shield. He mentioned himself. He mentioned that Legends Live Forever, that Daniel Bryan may not be that fitting into that mold, and the ones that do fit in that mold are Evolution. And then he nicely talks about how the Shield will not be able to stop Evolution and whatnot. I like that part. And then they call down Brad Maddox, and of course I haven't really cared about him either way, positive or negative. There's a lot that he can do, but there's also a lot that doesn't matter. Then they have Kane come down, beat his ass, tombstone him, and then, you know, they fire him. And to me, the entire segment seemed a little bit too long and kind of a waste of time. Now, I changed my tune just a little bit at the end of the show when Brian brought up the fact that Kane was ordered down the ring, which allowed Brian to see that Steph was a liar. So that kind of ties up that little bow that we all knew, but it was just nice to see that they noticed, they mentioned, they didn't forget it. And then, like I said, the segue from one mention to the other kind of allowed me to kind of forgive the opening segment. I will admit that I still am not completely sold on it. It took too long. I feel like the entire show was a bit rushed, and it wouldn't have been had they just tightened up the opening just a little bit.
We disagree on a couple of things here about the opening segment, and one of the main ones for me is the fact that I've made it very well known both here and on the ES Forum that I am a big fan of Brad Maddox. And honestly, what I'm hoping for is his firing, if you will, as the general manager of Raw will lead to him coming back into an active wrestling role, because having seen some of his work down in NXT, he's actually not too bad of a wrestler either. And obviously the guy is pretty charismatic given the role and what he had to work with in the bit that he had as the Raw GM. So I'm kind of looking forward to hopefully seeing maybe Brad Maddox join the side of Daniel Bryan. Now, obviously, they would be wise to have Maddox getting involved in the Shield business if they bring him back babyface, because there's a level of continuity there with the fact that the Shield kind of kicked his ass, bullied him into giving them the commentator spots, and then that's what led to his firing there. But at the same time, Maddox has never been outright against Daniel Bryan, to my knowledge, so therefore I would find it interesting for Maddox to be a guy that Bryan would recruit into his fight against the Authority, especially now that Maddox has an axe to grind.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Kane-Daniel Bryan situation goes, I mean, obviously we all knew that it was going to go down that way. We knew that Kane was acting on behest to Stephanie and behest of the Authority in order to get the belt off of Daniel Bryan by any means necessary, because they apparently are the Nation of Domination.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing for me with that was, as well as, like you said, it was a good callback to the opening segment when it was Kane who was doing the bidding of Stephanie and Triple H. After Triple H threw the first shot to Brad Maddox, Kane took care of the rest before Stephanie delivered the "you're fired." So it was a good callback to the opening segment, which gave it a little bit of point in context. And we will touch on the Shield situation with Evolution as well here in a little bit, because I don't know about you, but I thought the main event was probably one of the better hype segments they've done for a pay-per-view main event this year.
Yeah, I liked it.
So we'll get into that here in a little bit more as we continue on the Raw reaction. Once again, Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero joining you. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, Powerhouse Radio. And, Tony, let's talk about Raw.
All right. So, you know, we had a middle segment of the show that they had back-to-back awkwardness, okay? And I believe that there are levels to every show. You need humor. You need an injection of unserious, you know, immature type of make your kids laugh, and I'm sure if my little brothers were watching Raw with me, the youngest one would have completely laughed at one of these segments, while the other one would have just stood in stupor, like, what the hell's going on? And the two segments that I'm talking about are, first, Alicia Fox lost to Emma, and then continued to be a little bit of a nutcase. She started off small, smacking some coke out of some guy's hand, and then didn't steal any hats, but decided to ring the ring bell numerous times, pour coke all over herself, beat up a stagehand, give him a wedgie, and then make out with him, and just go nuts. So there was that. And then if you have not seen the show and my recap, of which I'm telling you right now is all, and you're wondering, that can't be it, that is pretty much it. Okay. Now, immediately after
that match, we have
El Torito versus Drew McIntyre, where Drew loses the match due to his face falling into a turnbuckle, and he's pinned 1-2-3. Afterwards, Hornswoggle runs into the ring, attacks El Torito. They hold him down, and Hornswoggle rips the tail off of El Torito and proceeds to run around with it and then throw it back at him. Both of these things, I can't say that it took me out, but when you came back from the commercial break and they were in the trainer's room, I literally stopped typing. I couldn't cover this particular aspect of the show anymore. You have the El Torito match. You have the dude getting his tail ripped off, and then later on you have Alicia Fox going nuts and stuff. And these two segments, I guess what I want to talk about most is, do they work for you? Do they belong there? And when are you removed as a fan and just say, like, all right, that's enough?
I've been fed up with the Torito and the Torito Hornswoggle 3MB Los Matadors angle for months. I give them a pass for WLC at Extreme Rules because that match was awesome. Everyone bumped their ass off to show that, yeah, you give us a crap storyline, but guess what? We're still going to make it work. We're going to get over in spite of you all. Real quick, McIntyre Torito was actually after Summer Rae and Eva Marie, not after Alicia and Emma.
Yeah, all women look the same to me, AJ, so whatever. But no, I do stand corrected. The Alicia Fox and Emma match wasn't until later in the show.
As far as what I think of the matches themselves go, Alicia and Emma actually kind of interests me because I like Emma. I've liked Emma since she was back in Shimmer as Tennille. She's a student of Lance Storm, so that automatically appeals to my fandom of women that can actually wrestle and aren't just eye candy. Eva Marie. But, yeah, as far as Ellen and Alicia Fox go, I think it's something different that they're doing with the diva here, and that they're letting Alicia show this multiple personality almost angle with her. And I think that it's something that's garnering Alicia a lot more attention than she was originally getting, and as well as putting to the forefront that Alicia's not half bad as an in-ring worker at times either. She can be a little bit sloppy. I seem to remember an axe kick a while back injuring somebody because she hit him in the small of the back with it. How you hit somebody in the back with an axe kick, I'm not entirely sure. But I'd say the Alicia and Emma situation entertains me a lot more than the Torito and Hornswoggle match. Mask versus hair at the pay-per-view for Torito and Hornswoggle. Do you have any interest at all?
None whatsoever. I do, the reason why I juxtapose these two segments in terms of togetherness would be I wanted to look at them both as segments that were ultimately supposed to be entertaining in a random way, you know, and I want to highlight the fact that I agree. I thought that the Alicia Fox and Emma match was relatively good. I think that Alicia's character is at least a character. I'm very happy that Emma came out by herself, not with Santino, and I feel that they're given. We saw two women's matches on the show. We saw Paige watching in the background. They have storylines. These women are becoming more and more characters, which is something they just haven't had before. So I guess what the point in comparing both of them is the fact that with Alicia Fox and Emma, something worked there. Yes, it wasn't to the best quality. There was a really, really sick-looking backbreaker that Alicia Fox did. And I don't mean sick in a good way. That shit looked like it hurt. But the tenacity that she showed, the way that Emma's face just hit the barricade, like, you're going to remember this far more than her just, you know, spinning around a foxtail and doing nothing of the sort afterwards. So her character is growing, and I'm okay with that because I feel that this will all hopefully lead to something. Then you look over on the other side where you see Hornswoggle and El Torito. What is that going to lead to? You know, and maybe this is just us wishing for something a bit more serious or a bit more, you know, just more entertaining, because I'm not entertained by it. I'm not in the least, and it's not because they're little people. It's because it's asinine. You want to...
Would you shut the hell up?
No.
Not to you.
Really,
towards...
Yeah.
Not to you. That was towards the Hornswoggle and... El Torito situation. Carry on.
Yeah. Well, no, I think, you know, they expanded upon it. We went to commercial. They came back. They're in the trainer's room. The trainer's saying, I'm not a veterinarian. I don't know what I could possibly do about the tail. They're like, yeah, it's funny, but to a degree, you know, and it's not the type of funny where you're like, oh, that's funny. It's like, all right, you know, I can see why my little brother would laugh at it. But if that were gone from the show, ask yourself, would it matter to you? Not at all.
I think El Torito deserves better, personally. One of the things that I mentioned is, obviously I mentioned that I'm a big Shikara fan, and I know where Torito comes from. Torito used to be known as a famous mini wrestler named Masquerita Sagrada.
Okay.
But this guy was the be-all, end-all of mini wrestlers. And now they're putting him in this comedy, and I use the word comedy in air quotes there, gimmick as a bull, basically so they can give Hornswoggle something to do. They mentioned on Raw tonight that Hornswoggle has been employed with the WWE for 8 years as of today. That blew my mind.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face.
I meant to hit that one earlier.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Lucky for you, the restock is in full order. Hold on, let me get back down there. Sound Monkey has to dance. Give him a quick second.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I wanted to point out the okay, we have the Shield versus Evolution, we have the storyline culminating to, you know, to an end of Payback, and then, you know, in the interim tonight we have Evolution versus Cody Rhodes and Goldust, and after Cody Rhodes is pinned, we get the announcement that this match is now a tag team elimination match with no holds barred, and I was questioning almost immediately why Cody didn't come back or why he didn't just stay in the match or whatever. We can use the face credibility and how, you know, whatever excuse. But a lot of commenters in the Raw report, while I was recapping it, said something that, you know, everyone was cue the Shield's interruption in T-minus 1 minute. Oh, can't wait for the Shield to come down. Oh, it's only a matter of time before the Shield is on their way. And a lot, I'm talking more than one, more than 10, we're all saying that the Shield are about to come down and save Goldust or just be there to prevent Evolution from winning, to enhance the storyline, to make it continue. And the WWE opted not to do that. They allowed the Shield, they allowed Evolution to take the win, to get the win cleanly, not be interrupted, not be bothered or hurt by it. And it was, you know, it worked, right? So the reason why I brought it up is because I wanted to kind of allow that. Okay, well, basically the comments that were saying the Shield was going to come out, I wanted to let them know that the Shield didn't need to come out, and why would they come out? They've always been a group that is not about justice, no matter how many times they say it. They're a group that's about themselves, and not in an arrogant way, simply in a way that they are continuing to be built up as something important to themselves as well as to the product. So them not coming out didn't bother me in the least. Them not even caring about Cody Rhodes and Goldust, if you want to take it back to an actual legit reason, you could probably help out more so than I can, Harry, in terms of dates and whatnot, but didn't they lose the titles to Cody and Goldust? And moreover, didn't they get beaten in order for the Rhodes brothers to get their jobs back? So, like, with all that history still intact, and the Shield known to be a group that just doesn't have other alliances, doesn't it make more sense for them not to even care what happens to Rhodes, to Goldust and Cody?
You are absolutely correct in the fact that the Rhodes brothers defeated the Shield to get their jobs back. You are also correct that the Rhodes brothers were the ones to take the tag titles off of the Shield. Let me grab my almanac here, and I can give you exact dates on the tag title change, too, because I know you asked me for a date there, so. Go ahead, continue your theory on this as well.
Oh, well, you know, while you're looking for the dates, it's very simple. It was a small thing that I saw, like, I don't know if it was just us jaded fans assuming, like, we know what's coming next, and everybody's saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, it's only a matter of time. The Shield, I've seen this before. The Shield's going to come down. They're going to attack. Goldust is going to win, whatever it may be. But they didn't go that route. And for every time that we assume they're going to do something, there's almost always these little moments where the WWE just says, no, we're not doing that. And I know this is minuscule in comparison to all of the other things that we've been able to predict as obvious. But I really like that not only that they were able to do that, but that they were able to actually trick the audience that is so jaded. Like, I don't care if it was just 10 people in the comment section that were saying, oh, the Shield's coming out, the Shield's coming out. Well, guess what, guys? You were wrong. And in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with being wrong, because I prefer being surprised or being like, well, shit, they did something different.
October 6th at Battleground for the match where they got their jobs back. October 14th in St. Louis on Raw is when they won the tag titles.
Nice. There you have it, folks.
two things about that. While I was looking up the dates, I had a chance to think about my response to your original statement about that. One, it makes perfect sense for the Shield not to want anything to do with the Rhodes brothers because, as you mentioned, the Shield have always been about themselves, and why would they want to get involved in the business of people that have personally set back the Shield's careers, even if it was at the hands of the Shield trying to do the authorities bidding at the time? Number two, they had been teasing the contract signing the entire night, so you had to know that that's where the blow-up between the Shield and Evolution was going to happen. So there was no point in wasting the Shield in the middle of the car and taking away the reaction that they were going to get when they came out for that contract signing at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's my official thought on it anyways.
Well, that makes sense, and something that I didn't really consider, the fact that, you know, obviously you don't want two blow-ups, you don't want two big moments. The building it to the end helped enhance the contract signing as a whole.
Exactly. That was my personal opinion on that as well. As far as your thing about mentioning that why didn't Cody Rhodes stay at ringside, because when Justin Roberts announced that he had gotten word that the match was being turned into an elimination match, he mentioned that Cody Rhodes was to leave ringside.
Hmm. Well, there you go.
So I figured I'd toss that along here. Real quick, before we go into our next break here, I just wanted to say that one of the things that we're going to mention here is tomorrow will be the 3-year anniversary event here on Powerhouse Radio, the 3-year anniversary of the Greg DeMarco show. We're hoping to hear from Greg before the show goes off the air, but if it doesn't, make sure you stay tuned tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Eastern, I believe, 7 o'clock Pacific. Make sure you check the website to be sure, though. I'll try to look up that information while we're at the break here. And when we come back, it's time for Harry's Hit. Let me see what I can find as far as music for you fine folks go. Ain't nobody got time for that. All right.
One, two, is this on? Yo, Jimmy, hit me with that Triple H. Tell me whose time it is now. Yeah, just kicking it up here. Sometimes, no, here comes trouble. Not gonna listen to anybody. Tell me who and what to be. Not trying to be like everybody. Power to play, make believe.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
And my bad news is that Greg DeMarco still hasn't got me a sound effect for my hit, but let's get into it anyway. Tony, it's time for Harry's hit.
Get him.
All right, so here's my deal. You know, I had a chance to think about it while we were doing the show, and something stood out to me here a little bit more than the rest of the show did. And since we didn't really get a chance to cover it in full detail while we were discussing the Shield not coming out to save the Rhodes brothers, I want to talk about the contract signing.
Okay.
I mentioned earlier in the show that I thought it was one of the better build-ups to the towards a pay-per-view main event that we've seen in the WWE in a long time. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, it was a good one. There was some little hiccups that I can just bypass and accept as a whole that it ended up being pretty awesome.
A couple of things to me that stood out about it was Roman Reigns just casually throwing the chairs out of the ring while Ambrose and Rollins were talking.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was thinking to the production staff, why did you even bother to put these in here? Ambrose acting like a crazy person. Shocker. By throwing the last chair out in his traditional psychotic fashion while Reigns started to speak. And the other thing that I think we both caught right before the fight broke out at the end of the show, did they or did they not bleep a bullshit from Roman Reigns? Because it sure sounded like it.
Yeah, I believe so. At first I thought he said just like shushing Triple H, but then I realized that that didn't make any sense. And it wouldn't get a pop as loud as the crowd was after he said that. So I think that was most definitely a bullshit. That just added to the intensity and the importance of the match to them and to Reigns.
Speaking of intensity, we saw the long-awaited return of Triple H's sledgehammer being used tonight as well. I said last week on the Raw Reaction that I felt that the Shield had gotten too much of an upper hand against Evolution thus far. And I believe that tonight was a good way to sway people, especially with Triple H softening up both Reigns and Ambrose with that sledgehammer, to make you have that thread of doubt in the back of your head that maybe the Shield are going to go down this Sunday at Payback. Yes, no,
yeah.
Agree, disagree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the sledgehammer has lost a lot of effect in recent years. However, it doesn't mean that it doesn't add to the realization that maybe the Shield isn't as strong as they've been portrayed to be, and maybe all Triple H needed was that one weapon because, you know, who was standing at the end of the night and why. And the reason why is because of that sledgehammer, as well as just a little bit more communication between the teams. So, they did go the right way. Like you said last week or the week before, Evolution hasn't really looked strong in your eyes, and I'm really glad that they were able to at least help you out in terms of that this week.
Do you think it was the right decision for Evolution to stand tall tonight?
Yeah, sure. I saw nothing wrong with it. It goes in line with what do you want to see at the pay-per-view versus what do you want to see on Raw. Again, this is a selling point to enhance the effects of the Shield winning. When you watch this, you're like, well, the Shield has to win. I have to watch them win. It's just an awesome feud in general. Everything that the Shield has been involved in is really great to see. But yeah, I think it was a good segment to end on. I think it really sold the match even more so than it already was. I have no issues with Evolution standing tall, and I'm really excited to see who comes out the winner, even if I do believe that. We'll also see in a little bit who I believe.
Oh, I had a funny feeling we're probably going to agree on the match winner for this one, but I think we're going to have a different context of getting there, and we'll discuss that a little bit more because we will be doing, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we will be doing our Payback prediction series. I'm actually hopping on to 411mania.com in order to get the card for the show up and ready for when we do that. You're looking a little parched over there, Tony.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired, pretty thirsty.
You're tired and thirsty. That's never a good combination.
All right, well, before we get into the predictions, and this was originally, I believe, supposed to be a Let's Talk About Raw segment, but since we're moving along, I'm going to go ahead and bring it up here, and we'll just we'll just talk about it at length in regards to something we haven't brought up, Cena, Wyatt, and the introduction of Jerry Lawler into the storyline. I wanted to kind of give that whole thing a little bit more of a spotlight and tell you whether I thought it worked or not. So basically, for those that didn't see it, randomly, my feelings are it was random. The Wyatt family calls Jerry Lawler into the ring to talk to him, and Bray Wyatt, King doesn't comply, so Bray Wyatt sends out the family to bring him into the ring, to force him into the ring, and just as they're about to grab him, JBL steps into the fray to stand up for Jerry Lawler, and he ends up getting clotheslined. And because of that, he's getting laid out on the floor for a while, and actually, gets knocked out, basically. So he gets hurt. Cole stands still. They finally bring King into the ring. We're about to get Sister Abigail hit upon Jerry Lawler. And then Cena comes out, of course. Cena does not get the upper hand. He gets attacked, which brings out the Usos to help. And this goes in line with the tag match that's coming up between them two. And you know what? Before I tell you how I felt about the thing overall, why don't I hand it back to you so that you could talk about the Usos and Harper Rowan and their interaction with each other as far as what you expect and don't expect from that.
Let's talk about Raw point here, and then we'll let you continue your diatribe here on the situation with Cena, Wyatt, and Lawler. It's actually going to turn into let's talk about main event.
Okay.
We're getting a 2-on-2 match on main event between the Usos and Harper and Rowan. They've already done this match once before. The Usos won, but it was by disqualification, if I recall correctly. I fully believe that we're going to see Harper and Rowan win and win clean on main event, and it's going to set up a tag title match for Payback. And the reason I feel that this is important is because it will mean that every single one of the major titles in the WWE, with the exception of Daniel Bryan's World Heavyweight title because of his injury, will be defended on a card. It'll be the first time that we've seen all of the titles defended on the same show in quite a while.
Well, that's an interesting statistic.
I'd have to look back to actually get the exact time the last of all of them were defended on the same show, but I don't know that it's happened yet this year.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all, actually.
But anyway, so that was my main point there, and I remember mentioning this earlier, the fact that it was going to be my hit, but obviously we ended up talking about the Shield Evolution main event segment as my hit because of the fact that it just stood out to me as far as not being touched on when we discussed it earlier. But that was the big thing for me is that I did want to mention the fact that I do think that Harper and Rowan are going to win on main event here. And we'll get into my prediction for the pay-per-view as well here if the match happens. Now, since the match isn't announced, do you want to include that in our predictions if it does get announced? Or do you want to just kind of take a flyer on that since it's not official?
It's up to you. I don't see any reason why we couldn't. I mean, if it's not on there, it's just us having fun. If it is on there, then we can be right or wrong.
All right, that's fair enough. All right, I'll let you get back to the Cena, Wyatt, and Lawler segment now. Go ahead, carry on.
Yeah, well, basically what I wanted to talk about was the bringing Jerry Lawler into the fray. Now, I know that he will pretty much forever have a tie-in with the fans. I know that he is a name, a common name. And Bray Wyatt did a pretty good promo before all of that stuff. I wasn't mad at the segment. I thought it went off well. I don't know if they were reaching. He tried to say that in order to get to Cena, you must get to the pawns, and it was ironic that he attacked the king because that's not a pawn at all. And it all seemed to work, but at such a low level for me, only because I just don't see the tie-in with King and Cena. Yes, we can say that they helped each other, that he brought Cena in, or that he helped Cena grow, or all this stuff backstage. But how many times have you really, truly seen them as friends? Like, this is not JR and, this is not JR and Austin. You know, this is not Stone Cold. This is not, you know, Jim Ross, where you know there's a tie. You know that they get along. You know that you can picture them in a backyard, you know, drinking beers and hanging out. I can't see King and Cena at the same place at the same time doing the same thing. So it took me away for a little bit. However, because why it's so badass and because this all just brought in everybody and everything and Cena's mic time was minimal, I mean, I'm not saying it didn't work for me. I am simply saying that the King inclusion seemed a little tacked on.
Well, actually, if you think about where Wyatt was coming from here with Lawler, it actually makes sense, and I'll explain. The biggest spewer of John Cena's propaganda at the announce table has been Jerry the King Lawler. Michael Cole mentions what Cena does for the various charitable companies here, but Lawler is constantly talking about what a good guy, what a good human being that Cena is. And Wyatt is insinuating that King is ignoring the underbelly of evil that apparently lies within Cena. Now, whether or not this is accurate, we don't know. They haven't gone down that road in the storyline yet. He tried to bring it out at WrestleMania. It didn't work. Because it reminds me of the great bit with the referee with the "This isn't you, John." So I think that, technically speaking, Wyatt actually has a point coming from Lawler. Two things about the actual segment itself. One, anytime King is inside of a WWE ring now, it worries me. And I don't mean worries from a fan perspective. I mean worries from a perspective of, we know King's history. We know the fact that the last time that King actually had an active role on a show was a situation when he had his heart attack up in Montreal. Now, I'm not going to say that's going to happen again, and obviously I don't wish that it would. But anytime he has any kind of physical involvement in the show, and I think that's another reason that the Sister Abigail to Jerry Lawler didn't happen, is mm-hmm. it's just going to make a large amount of people nervous with King taking bumps as someone of his age with his health past.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to touch on that you just spoke about there is the JBL taking the discus lariat from Luke Harper. I think it's ironic that JBL's the one that took the clothesline because, you know, JBL's kind of notorious for a famous clothesline of his own. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that JBL wanted to see just how hard Harper hit with it, too. Come on, you can't tell me you can't imagine Bradshaw backstage at the production meeting saying, you know what, that Harper kid, he looks pretty cool. I kind of want to take that lariat.
Yeah, I could see it. Now, I thought it was a nice little throwback to history in general, just having JBL hit by it. And him mentioning it in the back, or when he came back, saying he's been hit by it by The Undertaker, by various others, and that was one of the hardest ones that he's felt. So it added a little bit. I didn't mind JBL getting hit, especially because he was just kind of grating on my ears. So it worked. Cena, of course, he went out there and gave a completely average statement that didn't really... I don't know, that also came off really hokey. It seemed like a last-minute decision by him to say something kind of cool that just didn't really work for me. But, yeah, no, I get where you're coming from in regards to the King constantly spewing the propaganda, and it works in terms of Wyatt's vision. If that could have all been intact without trying to mention that the King was John Cena's friend and they knew each other and blah, blah, blah.
No, I think they overstated King's role as far as Cena goes. Like you said, it's obviously not an Austin, Jim Ross, or a Ms. Michael Cole situation between the two of them when Cole was a heel a couple of years back. But at the same time, you can see where Wyatt's coming from as well with the whole thoughts of Jerry Lawler being the voice to the people and he being the one that's spreading the message of John Cena to all the little kids that might be watching Raw at home as well. So I kind of understood where Wyatt was coming from with that personally. All right, so we had a little bit of a change in the format here for the Raw reaction here. We were going to debut our bit we were going to call the reactionary effect, which was where we were going to compare, for me as an announcer and for Tony as the guy that does the reviews for 411 Mania, what it was like being different, how it was different for us when we're doing the reviews or when I'm actually at the table calling a show. So we've decided that what we were going to do is we were going to go ahead and do our pay-per-view predictions here, and then we will debut the reactionary effect in a few moments. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll do our pay-per-view predictions, and then you'll get your final reaction as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Raw Reaction on Powerhouse Radio and blogtalkradio.com.
Countrymen and my friends, I had hoped against hope that some miracle would prevent a devastating war and bring to an end the invasion.
This most serious threat World Wrestling Federation has ever known.
The long-term future of sports entertainment could change forever.
A succession of actual wars have shaken the entire world and have threatened to bring on the gigantic conflict, which is today, unhappily, a fact.
No force of nature and no act of God could stop this invasion from happening.
I have said not once but many times that I have seen war and that I hate war.
This is our last chance.
There's no going back. There is no tomorrow.
They want to finish us off.
Feel this moment for the rest of your life.
This war is only half over.
You're goddamn right.
Back in the Raw Reaction, everybody. Harry Bronkers, Tony Acero once again with you. And are you ready to try to redeem yourself, Tony?
Yeah, let's see what happens.
All right, I have the 411 official match listing up in front of me here, so let's go ahead and go through this. Despite the fact that we may not care about it, we might as well give our prediction here. Mask versus Hair, Hornswoggle and El Torito. I don't think there's any question Torito's winning this, right?
Right. Hornswoggle's hair is far too long for people to care about. It almost harkens back to the day where he was a little leprechaun being thrown by JBL. He got hit with a trash can lid.
I miss Fit Finley. I'd just like to throw that out there.
Ditto.
His name was Finley, and he loved to fight. How could we argue?
Right, there's no argument.
Divas title. Divas title, Paige and Alicia Fox.
AJ Lee's going to win. I'm definitely sure about that. She's going to be running in, hitting everyone. Probably hit a go to sleep and then pin, and we will make sweet love all night. No, I'm going to go ahead and keep Paige is going to win this one. I think it's going to be a pretty good match. I'm hoping they've been working on it. There's no doubt in my mind that Paige is going to win, though.
I think Paige wins. I think the bigger story is what kind of freak out does Alicia have after the match.
Exactly.
Because as of right now, I think the focus on the Divas division is kind of off of Paige and more so on Alicia Fox in this multiple personality syndrome that she seems to be dealing with. U.S. title, Sheamus versus Cesaro.
Ooh, tough one. I don't imagine that they would give it to Sheamus just to lose it less than a month later. So I predict a no DQ end with Sheamus keeping the belt.
So you're thinking Sheamus by disqualification?
Yeah, not a no DQ. I predict a disqualification with Sheamus keeping the belt. I don't know who gets disqualified. Let's just assume that it's Cesaro, but I do believe that Sheamus will walk away with the title, and they're going to be like bruises the next day. They're going to kick each other's ass.
Oh, I'm fully expecting pictures of both men to make its way onto .com after the show with the bruises and the welts and the marks and stuff all over the bodies from the match itself. I think Cesaro wins the title here.
You think so? Nice.
And the reason I say Cesaro wins the title here is because I think at this point in his career, Cesaro needs the belt more than Sheamus does. Because Cesaro can use that belt to launch himself to bigger and better things, whereas Sheamus is at a point where I think he's above the U.S. title as far as his current character goes. And the rumors have been talking about the long-awaited Sheamus heel turn, and he's not going to turn heel while he's feuding with Cesaro because Cesaro is hated as a part of the Paul Heyman clan. So I think Cesaro drops the belt here, and then we see Sheamus move on and end up eventually turning heel as well. But your winner and new United States champion will be formerly Antonio Cesaro.
Cool.
Intercontinental title on the line. Go ahead.
Wade Barrett's going to keep his belt. He's going to have some bad news for RVD. I don't know. I haven't really liked RVD's return or even his first return. I just find him kind of boring going through the motions. He hits his spot, gets paid, and walks out. So this is just a title defense to help enhance Barrett's reign as something more than a fluke.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you here. I think Barrett retains the title here. There's no reason for this belt to be put on Van Damme. Barrett is one of the hottest heel acts in the company right now, and the Intercontinental title is doing nothing but racist talk. We've seen reports come out lately that there are three pet projects of Vince McMahon in the company, and Barrett is one of them, so I see no reason here at all that they're going to have any reason to take the belt off of Barrett here at the Payback pay-per-view.
Yeah, and thankfully, right, because I think it's been a long time coming. But go ahead, next.
If it gets added, tag titles on the line, Usos and Harper and Rowan.
You know, since the Usos have won, they haven't really done much with it. I guess it depends on who's going to win the Cena versus Wyatt match, because if Wyatt wins, then Harper and Rowan having the belts, you know, may just make them stand out a little bit more than they already are. But if Wyatt loses, then them having the belts doesn't really do anything for anybody, I don't think. So I'm going to stick with the Usos winning.
I think Harper and Rowan win the tag titles if the match is added. And the reason being is that them having gold can be used to further Bray Wyatt's cause of any time that he wants to get titles into the family, he can. He's just choosing not to because he feels that there are other things that he needs to correct personally first. But if there is something that he wants control of, he can get it.
Right.
Two other matches that I feel might have a possibility of being added are Rusev versus Big E, which is apparently back on after what happened tonight, with Big E making the save for Zack Ryder, and Adam Rose versus Jack Swagger, which we didn't really get a chance to touch on. What did you think of Adam Rose's in-ring debut tonight?
I wouldn't call his debut or his in-ring debut anything, you know, really impressive. However, his attack on Swagger was. It looked like he had this moment of, that's enough. And then he just went to town on Swagger. It was pretty cool. And the unique way that he did it, it was kind of like a mauling. Like, it goes back to his Kruger days where he was trying to pounce on him and attack the back of the neck. It was pretty awesome.
I remember saying last week here on the Raw Reaction that in order for the Adam Rose gimmick to work, he's going to have to show an aggressive streak, and I think that he's starting to show that.
Yes, it was good.
So I would definitely give Adam Rose that, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Even if it doesn't get added, perhaps maybe building towards that match as a singles match for Money in the Bank, which will be a little bit later on in the month of June. Let's get to the big two matches here. Last man standing, John Cena, Bray Wyatt. Cena can't lose two in a row to Wyatt, can he?
I don't think he can. I don't think they'd allow it. I'd be really surprised if it happened, but I think Cena's going to take this one. I don't know. Are they trying to extend this to another pay-per-view? Are they trying to bring it out a little bit more? What more can be said? I'm not saying I'm tired of it. I love Wyatt, but, you know, the song has already expired as far as enjoyment goes, so it's only a matter of time before the feud does the same. So I don't know, is this the end? Is this the final cap of the feather, or is this just, say, another chapter in a longer, battle?
Well, it goes back to something we've discussed before about how we both miss the days of feuds lasting multiple pay-per-views, and especially back in the times where there were only four, five, six pay-per-views a year, and you had these year-long builds where they were meeting on three, four, five pay-per-views in a row.
Yep.
I've heard talk of this feud going all the way to SummerSlam. I don't see that happening personally. Unfortunately, I think Cena gets the win here, even though Wyatt could use it more, and especially given the fact that the Wyatt family and the Usos will both probably be involved in this match in some way, shape, or form. But I think Cena wins here, as much as I hate to say it.
Yeah, okay, and my official prediction would be a Cena win as well. I'm not opposed to them continuing. I just need a slight tweak in the storyline. And maybe we'll get that come Sunday.
All right. What I'm guessing will be the main event here, I'm going to ask you about the Shield and Evolution. And this is a two-parter. A, who wins? B, who survives?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Survivor Series, you know, with Reigns just handling it. I don't believe he'll handle everyone. I do believe he'll be the last man standing. I think the Shield wins. I think he pins Triple H, and I think it sets off a storyline that ends at SummerSlam between them two. Those are the rumors, but, you know, the rumors change almost every week, so we'll see. But that's what I'm going to stick with. The Shield wins, and Reigns is the last man standing over Triple H.
I would not be surprised to see Evolution get swept here. And the reason I say that is because of the way that Raw went down tonight and the fact that the Shield's own triple power bomb through the announce table was used against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll be in a power bomb through the announce table that plays the difference in this match, as I think the Shield will triple power bomb Triple H through the announce table. And I'm going to say that Ambrose and Reigns survive. I think Rollins will get in a lot of excellent moves. I think Rollins might even get a pinfall in over one of the members of Evolution. But I do think that if any of the members of the Shield are going to take a fall in this match, it's probably going to be Rollins.
Nice.
But I will pick the Shield as well, and like I said, I'm going to say that Ambrose and Reigns survive. I understand you've got some personal matters to attend to.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'll go ahead and say goodbye to Tony here, and then I'll see you next week, buddy.
Yep, join us next week. Talk to you guys later.
All right, Tony Acero, everybody, 411mania.com, and again, you can find him on the Yes, Yes, Yes Facebook page. Once again, I'm Harry Broadhurst, and it is now time for your final reaction. As much as I hate to say it, as far as go-home episodes were, as far as go-home episodes of Raw were, this one was a little on the disappointing side. I wouldn't say that it was a bad show, but at the same time, they've done a lot better recently. Were there things that stood out tonight? Yes. I've mentioned earlier that I thought the Shield Evolution main event segment was fantastic. I'm intrigued once again to see where they go with Big E and Rusev, if that has anything. And I enjoy the fact that they're giving more of an edge to Adam Rose. I don't know how I feel about Adam Rose's offense, but time will tell whether or not that works itself out. In addition, I'm also curious as to where the storylines are leading for both Alicia Fox as well as both of the undercard titles, the U.S. and the Intercontinental title, which is a big accomplishment in that they're actually making us care about the undercard titles again. That being said, I thought there was far too much filler on tonight's episode. A segment backstage with Stephanie and Del Rio that went nowhere. The whole bit with Hornswoggle and El Torito, again, like we said earlier, tremendous waste of time. Damian Sandow as Davy Crockett. Are you freaking kidding me? I think the last of his career dignity just finished itself off. Anyways, I'm going to go with a C for tonight's episode because there were things that stood out, but not enough for me to be thoroughly entertained for all 3 hours. And I understand that 3 hours of entertainment is a lot to ask, but at the same time, I also know that there have been times recently, and especially in the build-up to WrestleMania, where they've been able to give us all 3 hours and make us want to pay attention to everything that happens.
That's cool.
As far as tonight's episode goes, I am going to give it a C. And I will say that I do plan, I have a show this Sunday for Black Diamond down in Weirton, West Virginia. If you happen to be in the area, I highly recommend that you check it out. If you do and you listen to the Raw reaction, I encourage you to come on up to me, say hi, let me know that you're a fan. And like I said, I'm always happy to talk to my fellow wrestling fans. And then afterwards, I'm hoping to be able to get a chance to watch Payback before Raw comes on the air. Regardless of whether or not I get to see the show in time or not, I will be back here next week for you guys. Tony will be back here next week for you guys for the Raw Reaction. This has been the Raw Reaction, a product of ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next week, June 2nd, for the Raw Reaction.
You're welcome!
the Raw Reaction, a product of Powerhouse Radio, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. Join us tomorrow night for the 3-year anniversary of the Greg DeMarco Show. Blog.